It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The Wisconsin Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week in a case involving the state's nearly 50-year-old spill law as it relates to emerging harmful environmental contaminants, things like PFAS. That's a group of manufactured chemicals that have been used in industry and consumer products for decades.
The law requires a company to clean up and restore the affected area if it spills or discharges hazardous substances.
Attorneys representing Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce argued that the law can't force businesses to test for and clean up PFAS without first creating an administrative rule.
But an assistant district attorney representing the DNR said there's no doubt PFAS chemicals are hazardous. Let's listen.
It would greatly hamstring DNR's ability to protect public health and the environment. Harmful spills like Leather Rich's would not just vanish. Instead, they would remain in the environment unless and until DNR can promulgate rules.
Our position is that DNR has not previously regulated a broad category of emerging contaminants like it does here. That is a new interpretation, it is a changed interpretation, and it requires rulemaking so that the regulated community can know what's expected of it.
We dig in now on this case before the State High Court with Dave Strifling, Director of Marquette University Law School Water Law and Policy Initiative. Dave, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
At the heart of this case is Wisconsin's 1978 hazardous substance spill law. Can you take us into this law, what it is, and acquaint us with its history?
Sure. So the law essentially requires persons or companies who possess or control a hazardous substance to investigate it and clean it up. And historically, DNR has always enjoyed a certain amount of leeway or discretion in applying the law and determining exactly what it means to be a hazardous substance. And the issue here is that there's no list of hazardous substances. Hazardous substances are defined in the law in terms of what they can do, whether they can contribute, for example, to an increase in mortality or a risk to human health or a hazard to the environment. And the problem, of course, is that our understanding of those things changes over time, and also that almost anything can be a hazardous substance depending on the quantity that's discharged. So the question here is whether DNR is still going to enjoy that degree of flexibility in requiring cleanups or whether it's going to have to become a lot more regimented in terms of what it has to do.
When you look over the decades, has this law always been contentious, or did PFAS chemicals make it so now more in recent times?
Well, there's always been disputes over the particulars of a cleanup, but I think this is the first time, at least I'm aware of, that anyone has requested that DNR formally make administrative rules to determine what should go in that group of hazardous substances. Again, I think DNR has historically enjoyed some degree of discretion, and you can understand why. You know, when an environmental spill happens, you want an agency, I think, to be somewhat nimble in its ability to respond to that spill rather than having to take potentially years to promulgate an administrative rule to address it.
So Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the state's business lobby, filed this lawsuit against the DNR back in 2021, arguing the state doesn't provide sufficient guidance on how it categorizes PFAS chemicals. What stood out to you about each side's position in the oral arguments before the justices this week?
Right. Well, from the company's side, you can see why they were upset. There's an adage in the law that bad facts make bad law. And there is some frustration here, I think, on their part, that the case involved a dry cleaner that was undertaking a cleanup for more traditional pollutants. And in the course of the cleanup, DNR told the company that it would also require cleanup of PFAS. And there was some back and forth there. The dry cleaner ultimately backed out of the program. DNR continued to enforce it. And the dry cleaner, as you said, now backed by WMC, sued the DNR. So, you know, there's some sense here from the business side that the rules were changed on it in the middle of the cleanup or in midstream. While DNR is arguing, on the other hand, that, you know, hey, we just became aware of this. We think it needs to be cleaned up, and we're going to add this to your program. So You know, there's some policy arguments on both sides here, and it's difficult to predict exactly what the justices are going to do with this.
So how might this ruling affect people in Wisconsin affected by PFAS contamination? You know, in particular, the residents of French Island who have been on bottled water since 2021.
Well, absolutely. It could have a significant impact if the court holds that these DNR cleanups are unpromulgated administrative rules and that DNR has to go through a rulemaking process to identify PFAS as a hazardous substance. It could delay these cleanups by years, potentially. DNR has adopted standards for PFAS in drinking water and surface water, but not groundwater. So at a minimum, this decision is going to affect cleanups of groundwater and perhaps even more importantly, those pumping drinking water from groundwater, because at least as of yet, we don't have standards for PFAS in groundwater. Those hopefully are coming. I think both those in the legislature and DNR have said that they would like to address PFAS, but there's nothing on the books yet. So this could result in a significant delay in PFAS cleanups. And, you know, I want to be clear that this case isn't just about PFAS. It's about anything that the DNR wants to clean up. You know, one of the things that came up at oral argument before the court was that DNR has required cleanup of some substances that we normally wouldn't consider hazardous at sufficient quantities. So, for example, if you have a tanker truck of milk that's departing a dairy and is spilled into a stream, DNR has required cleanup for that. Now, nobody would consider milk a hazardous substance in the ordinary sense, but at a certain quantity, it becomes one when it's released into the environment. So this isn't just about PFAS. It's a much bigger case than that.
We are discussing a case in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court involving the state's nearly 50-year-old spill law. Dave Strifling is with us, director of Marquette University Law School Water Law and Policy Initiative. I want to point to a moment in this hearing, and speaking first is Justice Jill Karofsky to attorney Delaney Brewer representing the plaintiff. Let's listen.
I didn't find an instance in your brief where you, in fact, disagreed that PFAS is a hazardous substance. Do you disagree with that?
We disagree that PFAS as a category is called a hazardous substance because the science on 9,000 compounds plus has not developed. And we footnoted that I don't have the specific site, but we absolutely raised that issue in our brief.
9,000 compounds plus has not been developed, the science on that. What is your response to that argument?
Well, I think it's certainly true that PFAS is a category of chemicals, and sometimes we're all a little bit loose in how we use that term. And there could be 10,000 or 15,000, depending on whose categorization you are using. But I think it just goes to how difficult it would be if we're going to require DNR to promulgate an administrative rule for every one of those compounds. I think that would be administratively impossible. I also think there's lots of science out there to show that PFAS as a category of compounds are harmful and toxic. So it's, I think, a pretty tough argument to make. It's difficult to say, in my opinion anyway, that PFAS haven't been shown to be harmful. There's quite a body of science that shows that they are. Again, if you want to break down to each one of the 9,000 compounds, certainly there will be differences in the effects that each one of them have. And again, if we're going to require DNR to do a rulemaking on each one of them, that would be pretty difficult.
Is it possible to make administrative rules in a timely fashion that are responsive to new and emerging scientific information and, you know, about chemical substances in our environment?
Yeah, I think the difficulty here is that for administrative rulemaking in Wisconsin, there are some additional hurdles that we don't see in every state. In some cases, there's approval required by the legislature. In other cases, the legislature can block administrative rules at its own discretion. So it's a process that is lengthy and spelled out in the administrative rules and the statutes for exactly how agencies have to go about doing that. And it's not just that we become aware of some chemical and we decide we want to regulate it. It's that there's an active spill happening here. And the effects of that can be felt within days, let alone months or years that it would take to promulgate a rule to address it. So again, you know, you're not just talking about PFAS, we're talking about ordinary compounds that can be hazardous at certain quantities. You're also talking about other emerging contaminants, pharmaceuticals, rocket fuel, cosmetics, microplastics, nanoparticles, you know, the list goes on and on of things that are in the environment that we're only just becoming aware of. So if DNR would have to make a rule to address each one of those things, and obviously you can break down those categories even further, that would be pretty difficult.
I want to take a look at just one example in recent times here with the spill law in action, and that's an oil spill, a crude oil spill, Enbridge Oil Pipeline, you know, that in Jefferson County, Enbridge submitted a report to federal regulators. 4 gallons of crude oil reaches groundwater. How could this state Supreme Court ruling decision impact a situation like a crude oil leak in Jefferson County?
Right. So DNR would certainly argue that crude oil is a hazardous substance as that term is defined in the statute. It's a hazard to human health. It's a hazard to the environment. And so DNR would certainly attempt to require a cleanup in that case. Now, if the Supreme Court rules against the state in this case that's going on right now, at least under the letter of the law, the company could argue that there hasn't been an effort by DNR to designate crude oil as a hazardous substance, to formally classify it as such. Now, I'm not saying the company would do that. I think it seems illogical to say that crude oil would not fit that definition. But depending on how the court drafts its opinion in this case, that could be one of the possible outcomes.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Dave Strifling is director of Marquette University Law School Water Law and Policy Initiative. He was with us to discuss oral arguments this week in a case before the state Supreme Court that could potentially change the DNR's ability to enforce the state's spill law and challenge the state's classification of what chemicals are considered hazardous substances.